Behind every major political movement that makes it to the history books, there are thinkers and strategists who work in the shadows, crafting narratives, setting the intellectual tone that future generations inherit. He has been at the very heart of India's political transformation, a man who has observed and chronicled some of the most defining moments of our democracy from the inside. Such a pleasure to be speaking to you today because we've known each other from different positions and in different avatars, if I might say so. And certainly as the person that many people, I include myself there, have admired you for the work that you have done. If I was to ask you, as you look at the world today and you look at India's place in the world today, how would you see it as being different from the time when you were active with India's Prime Minister?
I have great respect for you for what you have done for the country, for India's foreign policy. And I recall two things that connect us, both through Atal Bihari Vajpayee. One is the historic initiative that both of you took under P.V. Narasimha Rao's leadership when he was the Prime Minister in 1994. You were Congress, he was the BJP leader, but Narasimha Rao sent you to represent India at the United Nations Human Rights.
Under his leadership, yes. He was the leader of the delegation.
You were, you know, very dashing then. You are still dashing.
Thank you very much.
But that showed that on foreign policy, irrespective of differences domestically, we present one face, one voice. The other thing, I remember that we both went together to Pakistan on a track to diplomacy,
right,
for peace and normalization. So I hope that this conversation helps in a sharing of views on both these vital aspects of India and the world.
You were working closely with Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee, you know, and the bus trip happened, the coach trip happened. And there was a high point at which both domestically as well as internationally, bilaterally, he was seen as the last hope, last great hope for dialogue and for a solution. I don't think very many people are privy to this, and you would be. What was the last impression that Vajpayee had about his experience with Pakistan? I mean, was he a disappointed person? Was he still hoping that something would happen even beyond his years, etc.?
Salmanji, let me begin by saying that in a private conversation that I had with him after he had ceased to be Prime Minister in 2004, the BJP lost the election and your party, along with your allies, formed the government. One day I was having a conversation with him and he said that if I had had just one more term, I would have solved the Kashmir problem and I would have brought enduring peace with Pakistan. He was disappointed. He was betrayed by Pakistan, no doubt.
Right.
But he never lost hope. He never lost determination. He continued to work for peace with Pakistan and also peace with China because he knew that without peace with our two neighbors, India cannot realize its full potential. And the efforts that he undertook, and you mentioned the bus trip. In 1999, I went in the same bus with Vajpayee to Pakistan, and I could see the hope that he created in Pakistan. Let me just give one personal experience of that trip.
Sure, sure.
You know, at the Governor House in Lahore, there was a reception for our Prime Minister, and Nawaz Sharif, who was then the Prime Minister, Vajpayee Ji read out his poem. He was a great poet.
He was a great poet, yes, of course. Do you remember?
Jang na hone denge.
All right, okay.
Jang na hone denge. Now, I deliberately sat right in the last row just to get a reaction of how the Pakistanis would react. And there was the elite of Pakistan present there. The four lines from that poem, Bharat Pakistan Padosi, Saath Saath Rehna Hai. प्यार करे या वार करे दोनों को ही सहना है जो हम पर गुजरी बच्चों के संग न होने देंगे जंग न होने देंगे When he read out the whole poem, I could see many Pakistanis having tears in their eyes. Why? Because they know the cost of war.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And what has Pakistan really achieved? Since independence, since its creation, there is a huge betrayal of the Pakistan's own dream because of the path of religious extremism and terrorism that it took. So it comes down to this point that we must engage with the people of Pakistan, the political establishment of Pakistan, including the military establishment of Pakistan, and continue our efforts to tell them that it is not in your interest, it is not in humanity's interest. Let's be good neighbors. And this is what Prime Minister Vajpayee tried with utmost sincerity.
I have to tell you an interesting anecdote. After Mr. Vajpayee and I returned from Geneva and the Human Rights Commission, and he said, we'll give a photograph together to the India Today. And so I went across to his residence and he embraced me. And that picture came on the cover of India Today. 3 or 4 months later, we were in elections. And that picture was shown everywhere in Farukhabad, which is where I was contesting, saying that I had joined the BJP because of Vajpayee Ji embracing me. And so I lost that election. But anyway, he became prime minister. And some weeks later, he met me at the gathering in Delhi and came up and said, I am so saddened that you are not in parliament. So I said, I have only you to thank for it, Vajpayee. And he had a very, very good laugh. What is your take on Operation Sindoor, which... here we take officially and formally as having concluded or having come to the stage where it came for the suspension in a successful manner. But the kind of public support internationally that I think we expected and we deserved wasn't forthcoming. Is that something that you would agree with?
I will answer this question by first stating that the root cause of what has happened is terrorism coming from Pakistan. Pakistan, unfortunately, has not learned the lessons of history that making terrorism a part of state policy is against international law and is also suicidal for itself. Because no country has suffered more at the hands of terrorism and religiously inspired terrorism than Pakistan itself.
That's an irony. That's a real irony.
That's a real irony.
Yeah.
But somehow, there are people in Pakistan, in the ruling establishment, who think that by using terrorism against India, they can weaken India, they can subdue India, and somehow, one day, they'll be able to realize their dream of getting Kashmir. So before Operation Sindoor, we had a horrible terror attack at Pahalgam. I would say, having categorically stated that Pakistan must end its support to terrorism, the next thing I would like to say is that there is no military solution to the problem of terrorism. And that is very clearly shown by Operation Sindoor. How many times are we going to have this Operation Sindoor again and again? Because terrorism is not going to stop. Because there are always people in Pakistan for whom it's a low-cost endeavor. So every time a terror incident happens, are we going to resort to this kind of response? It's unsustainable. And therefore, we have to again come back to the path of dialogue with Pakistan. Now, there are people who say that what has dialogue gotten us? We've had many, many instances of dialogue with Pakistan. Now, the problem is such that it is not going to be solved if we lose patience. We have to have what is called uninterrupted dialogue and uninterruptible dialogue. My reading is that the international community is fully with India on our stated position that Pakistan must end terrorism.
Yes.
But when they see that two nuclear powers are close to a full-fledged war, they won't speak out because the whole world is concerned about a real war between India and Pakistan. This war lasted only 4 days. And we all know that just when India was actually gaining an upper hand, we stopped it. Why did we stop it? Because we also realize that the cost of escalation is very, very high and unacceptable. So the lesson to be learned, as I mentioned earlier, there is no military solution to the problems that we have with Pakistan.
China looms large in our perceptions. In whatever has happened with India in recent years, China has been on the horizon somewhere in one way or another. Now, how do you see us positioning ourselves with China? Are we doing enough? Are we doing too little? Is there a problem with our perception of China and our future with China? And then where does the rest of our neighborhood fit in? Is it different? Is it somewhat similar?
India and China are not just neighbors. We are civilizational neighbors in the sense that if you look at history, India and China are the only two living civilizations in the world with continuity of over 5,000 years. And in the course of these 5,000 years, we have interacted closely in the past. So close was our interaction that especially India has left a huge influence on Chinese civilization, which many Indians, unfortunately, are unaware of. Due to historical reasons, this interaction came to an end in the past 1,000 years. We have to come back to the path of being good neighbors. Vajpayee used to say that you can change history, you cannot change geography. You can change friends, you cannot change neighbors. India and China are going to be forever neighbors. And therefore, we have to make constant efforts to resolve our differences peacefully through dialogue. Both are to realize that our two countries, if we come together, we can change the destiny of the world, and the time has come for doing so. We all know where American leadership is taking the world. You know, they have absolutely no scruples. They have no commitment to any principles. It's back to gunboat diplomacy. They're threatening to take Greenland. They captured the serving president of Venezuela, kidnapped him, brought him to the United States, and they still talk of rule-based international order. Now, if this has to change, the two largest nations in the world in terms of population, the only two countries with populations of more than 1 billion, India and China, we have to come together. We have differences, especially the border dispute. But this border dispute cannot be resolved through military means. The only way it can be resolved is through dialogue and mutual compromise. Resolve this boundary dispute once and for all. And before that, make sure that no more Galwan Valley-like incidents. Because if the border is unclear, is disputed, there is always a possibility of such clashes. And every time a clash happens, our bilateral relations are pushed back several years. We can't afford that. We have to work towards reducing trust deficit. We have to work towards expanding cooperation on all fronts. And let me tell you that it is going to be enormously beneficial to India to have cooperation with China. Today, China has become the second largest economy, and the day is not far when China will overtake America. They'll overtake America even in technology. They're already doing so in many technologies. I've been to China more than 25 times.
Mm-hmm.
Their infrastructure is number one in the world today. I have traveled extensively in rural China. It's based on my own observation.
Let me just ask you, since you've been so close to the ground in China, you've traveled widely, you've met ordinary people. What is the perception of ordinary people in China about ordinary people in India?
Among lots of thoughtful Chinese, there is great admiration for India. They see India historically as a land of enlightenment, because Buddhism came from India to China.
Right.
For which they really think that this is a special nation. India is a special nation. We have a lot to learn from China. I'm saying this by adding one more fact, that even China has a lot to learn from India. How India, with all the diversities, is one. They don't have that kind of diversity in China.
China's attempts, as we've seen them, attempts to influence our neighborhood, South Asia, and the consequences of that for India, and on a larger scale, what does India now do with the immediate neighborhood, and perhaps extended neighborhood also, all the way up to Afghanistan? What are your views on that?
I must mention here that China has made a big mistake and is continuing to make a mistake by not being very explicit in condemning Pakistan's sponsorship of terrorism, which is one of the main reasons why there is anti-China feeling among Indians. I expect China to be principled and also look at their own self-interest, because terrorism, separatism, and religious extremism can do a lot of harm to China itself. They know this. And therefore, if they value friendship with India, they must do self-correction.
Let me bring you to the recent happenings at Davos, and I'm sure that you followed some of them. Prime Minister Carney has made an interesting statement there, which said that if you're not on the table, we are on the menu, etc. Obviously, targeting the neighborhood as far as he can see that neighborhood, and Europe. He was sending a message to Europe. So in terms of what President Trump is doing to his allies and he's doing to India, where do you see things going forward?
If Trump continues on this path, it's going to end in a big tragedy for America itself. No doubt about it. Because this is madness. Madness cannot be the way to deal with the world. Even your allies have self-respect. You mentioned the Canadian Prime Minister Carney. For him, for one of the closest, you know, not just geographically, but even every other way, United States and Canada are the closest of allies and partners. And
right,
Trump has, by publicly stating that he's going to make Canada a new province of the United States, the Canadians and the Canadian politicians, they don't want this relationship. So that's why very recently, the Canadian Prime Minister Carney, he went to Beijing. And now China-Canada relations are going to be stronger. I'm sure that Canada would like to have very close relations with India. So the world is changing, and Trump and the people who supported Trump are themselves to blame that United States is going to be the most isolated nation in the world. Only those who have some self-interest would like to curry favors with the United States. Otherwise, this is not the United States that you have known. You know, you have met many presidents of the United States.
President Obama being the last one. That what a contrast, what a contrast. But given that this is what is happening in the world, and President Putin's recent visit to India, which was seen as a moment of revival or reaffirmation, consolidation of historical relations between India and Russia. But how do you see two of us handling what the American president would like to do, or what he's already doing to us?
On Russia, I would like to say that Russia has been our time-tested friend, and this relationship should continue and will continue. India should play a greater role in bringing the war between Russia and Ukraine to an end. That's not something that should be left entirely to Trump or the Western powers. The stakes are much higher for the entire world. So India should play a much bigger role, because India has goodwill among both Russians and Ukrainians. Point number one. Second, Russia, China, India, so-called RIC, you know, which is at the core of BRICS, our own partnership should become stronger. The stronger our partnership, less possibility for outsiders to coerce India. So in order to ensure that external pressure cannot harm our national interest, we should forge strong relations between India, Russia, China, at the core of BRICS, which itself is now growing bigger and bigger. This year, India is going to host the BRICS summit, because now India has taken over from Brazil the presidency of BRICS. Other multilateral organizations in which both India and Russia are together, such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, also should be strengthened. And by the way, Shanghai Cooperation Organization is one multilateral forum where both India and Pakistan are members.
That's right, yeah. It
only goes to show that if India and Pakistan can attend the SCO summit, what is stopping us from having our own SAARC summit? India has to care for the neighbors. SAARC must be revived. Russia, China, the rest of Asian countries, we should come together. The world is changing. You see, the United States doesn't have the economic power to exercise its dominance. The only thing that they still have is the military power, but that's unsustainable. So let's look at the changing world and work together for creating a better world, a fairer world, a truly democratic world. Now, coming to the other point, we should play the role of an elder brother. What does the elder brother do in Indian culture? In elder brother cares for the whole family. So India has to care for the whole of South Asian family. Our slogan should not be just Viksit Bharat. Our slogan should be Viksit South Asia. All the countries of SAARC.
Which is what Prime Minister Narasimha Rao and Prime Minister Manmohan Singh spoke of a world without borders. And I guess Vajpayee Ji did exactly that.
He crossed the border. So, you know, in terms of population, South Asia is the most populous region in the world with a common civilizational heritage. From Afghanistan to even Myanmar, despite all the diversities, we are one civilizational family. So we should take active steps to ensure that our disputes do not become conflicts, and conflicts do not escalate into wars. So be it, you know, the conflict between Afghanistan and Pakistan, Pakistan and India, India, Bangladesh. Where are we going if these continue? Outsiders will exploit this for their own self-interest. And therefore, you mentioned neighborhood. The first principle of foreign policy is neighborhood policy.
My only thought for you is that with an advisor like you, how lucky that prime minister of our country must have been.
No, I was so lucky to have worked with one of the most enlightened statesmen India has produced, Atal Bihari Vajpayee. He was in the mold of Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. He belonged to a different party, but his outlook was Nehruvian, and which is why Nehru admired Vajpayee, and Vajpayeeji had huge respect for Nehru.
Thank you very much, but the theme today has been superbly about dialogue. Dialogue in different manners, in different places, in different forms, and I do hope that your clarion call for dialogue will be heard right across the globe, and it'll have its impact in times to come. Thank you very much.
Bahut bahut dhanyawad.
Thank you.
Shukriya.
Thank you very much.